The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
FlyPod.com. I'm Mark DeWitt. Welcome to Cover to Cover. Well, she's back. She's the New York Times best-selling author of a lot of books, Kim Harrison. She has a brand new book, kind of a different genre. The book is called The Drafter. Kim, welcome.
Hi, it's great to be here.
All right, The Drafter. Now, you know, when I first got this book, a drafter, I would think, would be maybe like the government putting you in service and stuff, but I don't think that's what a drafter is.
No, a drafter is someone with a very special skill of being able to jump back in time, oh, not too long, maybe a minute at the most, and rewrite a mistake that has been made. And the government finds these people when they're young and trains them to be special ops agents. And this is the story of Perry Reed.
All right, now you're not a drafter yourself.
No, I am not, although I do many drafts.
You know, I thought if I really made a mistake or something, you could just go back in time a few minutes and everything would be okay.
Not me. Nope. It's maybe wish fulfillment, yeah.
All right, well, Perry, you know what? As she drafts, and a drafter, they lose kind of some time as they do this, don't they?
They do. Being able to manipulate time, I thought, was a very strong gift, and you need strong drawbacks to balance that out. And so when Perry drafts, she loses not only the memory of the past that she's changing, but the past that she's created. And if she's unlucky, she'll lose even more than that, up to weeks and months of her history. And that's where the other side of the coin comes into play, which is the anchors, who help the drafters remember what they've forgotten.
All right, so I thought maybe they went out on a boat and the anchor was something that took her under the water. No. Okay,
no.
So that's what an anchor is. And, you know, an anchor reminds the drafter of what they've done, and they can kind of manipulate
yes,
that a little
they
bit
can.
Too, can't they?
They can, and that's where the problem starts. I guess after working with Rachel in The Hollows for so long, she's a young character. I wanted to write a more mature character who knew who she was, knew where she was going, had the job, had the money, had the prestige, and then what would happen if all of that was suddenly ripped away from her and how she would handle that. So that's kind of what's going on with The Drafter.
All right, so, you know, this is a brand new series, pretty much a sci-fi book, is that
yes,
correct?
It's kind of, it takes place in the future in Detroit. I chose Detroit as my city of choice because I wanted to see what would happen with all the plans they have in mind to bring the city back and what works, what didn't. And of course, Detroit has the wonderful history of music and automotive. And I tell you, I've had a problem trying to extrapolate beyond what we have into what we might have, especially with the automotive industry, because every time I come up with an idea of, oh, wouldn't it be cool if the cars did this, I turn on the TV or I open up, you know, my web browser and I find out, oh, yeah, it's reality now. So they're not flying cars, but battery cars are a lot more prevalent, and there's a lot more tech that goes with them.
Well, you know, she's got a pretty sweet ride.
Oh, I want Perry's car. I've called it the Mantis, and it changes color according to the electricity that you're running through it. And the whole paint job is a solar battery, so it charges itself. And I want her car. I want her car.
Okay, Perry's car, man, I mean, it's a sweet ride. The paint, kind of solar charging the car, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, and that has never been done, or
did you copyright that? No, but maybe I should. I would love to talk to some people in Detroit, yes. No, I don't think it's possible yet, but I think the technology might be very close.
You know, as I was reading The Drafter, I saw some different things because it is set in the future, and I've had other authors in that know about things with the government, and the government will say, well, no, we can't put that in, or this or that. You didn't have any problem,
I guess. I haven't run into that. No, I'm making it all up. So if I do come up with something and, you know, I get a knock at the door, it's no, I don't know anything. I know absolutely nothing going on with the government.
So it'd be Men in Black coming to your door and everybody else that read the book, they just shine a light in your eye and you just forget about that part.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, The Drafter. Now, of course, you've been writing kind of a vampire-type series. What was the challenge with going from that series to a totally different genre?
Well, there were two, actually. One was the technology. I'd been so focused on what can I do with magic, how can I be inventive with magic, that going to what can I be inventive with technology was kind of a jump. And I keep thinking of things today. Oh, I wish I would have put that in. I wish I would have done that. So book two is going to have some extra special things in it. But I think the hardest thing has been trying to convince my audience that it's still Kim Harrison, that there's still relationship issues I'm working through, that it's very character-driven, even though it's a sci-fi thriller with all the action, all the pacing that you would expect, it still has a story about people in it. And reaching my old readers and convincing a new demographic to take a chance on it, I think has been the hardest thing. We don't really know how to market it, and that can be a huge pitfall for a new book.
So why a sci-fi series? I mean,
That's my love. I grew up reading science fiction, and I'm really happy to be able to work in it. My schooling is, I've got a 4-year degree in science, engineering, and technology. So writing the magic, of course, I could bring in elements of science into the magic. And I did with, you know, talking about genetic genocide and Punnett squares and stuff like that. But now I can just kind of let go of all the magic and focus on the technology. And it's been great. I love it.
So you're more at home here, I guess.
I feel more
for right
at home.
Now. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, I mean, you know, you had to think up different magic spells and everything else with the other books. Mm-hmm. You know, how many books do you see in The Drafter, in this series?
I'm seeing 3. We may go further than that when I get to that third book. We may not. I have another idea of a series that I want to work on that's been sitting in the back of my head for 10 years, evolving and changing. I've kind of had to wait for my skills as a writer to kind of catch up to what I want to do, because I know it's ambitious and I needed some background. And, you know, I've got the character development pretty well down now. And with The Drafter, I'm working on the pacing of a faster book with a wider scope. And once I have that down, I think I'll be able to handle what I want to do with grace. We'll see.
So, you know, you've already got pretty much an idea for even the next series. So you're kind of juggling a few things here.
I am, but that's where I'm comfortable. I actually have a manuscript written for Grace, and it was a toss-up. What do I show my editor? Do I show her The Drafter, or do I show her Grace? And I chose The Drafter because it was kind of building towards what I wanted to do with Grace. I'm in this for the long haul. You know, I've written a lot of books, and My writing has changed and evolved and hopefully grown, and I'm ready for the next step.
Well, I think this is a fun book, and it's a book that you can really get into the characters of this book. I mean, shoot, you
fall
in love with them.
It's written from third person, which is a step away from what I had been writing for a long time, but I wanted to do that so I could write from multiple points of view. Perry Reed is the main character, but we have a lot of chapters from Silas, he's wonderful. He's kind of a brawny brainiac, if you can believe it. He has a lot of gifts. Then there's Jack, who is her anchor, who's kind of shifty, but we don't know that at first. And then we've got Fran, who's the head of the covert organization. And so there's a lot of people I'm working with, and they're all fairly well-rounded. And I love working in these multiple points of view. So I think that's going to be, you know, where I'm heading from here on out.
You know, Jack and Perry, their first confrontation. He's looking. He must be the computer guy. He's a smart guy and everything.
He is.
And he can't find what he wants. And then here comes a guard.
You Things know, this, get out of
oh,
hand.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And that was kind of fun to... Actually, I'm going to say watch because you really brought it to life.
Well, thank you. Thank you. When I write, I hate to say it, I do kind of see a movie unfolding in my head. I've tried to pace the drafter so that it would be easy to make into a movie. I think there's a lot of depth there for actors to dig in and make it their own. I think it could also make a good series on the television because it's paced. You could make our episodes very easily from the characters and situations. And I kind of did that on purpose, too. But it is still a book of my heart. I mean, I didn't write it for a particular venue. I wrote it for me and kind of tailored it so that it would be easier to turn into a film or a TV series if that opportunity came along.
Kim, I'd never heard of a drafter before. Maybe I'm just not that schooled in sci-fi sometimes, but is this your own making?
Oh, no. It's a mishmash. It's a little bit of this and a little bit of that. We watched, what was it the other day? We watched Galaxy Quest, and I realized, that's where I got the idea to jump back, 13 seconds and change a mistake. But it's kind of like Minority Report that we see multiple futures. And there's, it's just picking what I like from here or there. But I believe that having a drafter and an anchor, having to work together so closely, I do believe I'm the only one who's done that.
I always thought, or I do like the type of books that go back in time. There are several books and movies like that. The drafter only goes back so far. Do you see a character going back even farther?
Actually, I do. As I've written it, only small jumps are possible of like 40 seconds to a minute and a half. The scope they can reach varies from a block to a mile across. So, there's no real hard and fast rules to this. However, I have proposed in a novella or a novelette that's even shorter, about 50 pages called Sideswiped is out in an ebook. And that one proposes that you can go back and change something way back in the future. Of course, the person who did this doesn't survive it, but I think maybe in book 3, Perry might play around with this and the long jump, so to speak, might be possible, or it might not.
So does it have to do with a flux converter?
No, it is all in the head. This is all mental gymnastics. And I've played around with jumping in time quite a bit. I do it a little bit in my young adult series that's out there. And I've got a fantasy series where a character goes back in time just with her mental powers. So these are not ideas that are brand new to me. I've been playing with these a lot.
Kim, something different this time on tour. I mean, you pulled up in a pretty big vehicle.
Holy smokes! That bus pulled up in front of my house this morning, and I just about dropped my teeth. There's one thing about seeing a picture of your tour bus and then having it pull up, chug, 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 in front of your house. It's something else. It's a fabulous bus. My publisher, Simon & Schuster, they put this together for me. I've got, I think it's 6 or 7 cities in, 4 or 5 days, and we're trucking. I mean, we are moving. It's a beautiful bus. I am never getting on an airplane again.
So how easy is that to drive in traffic? It looks huge. Maybe I should ask the driver.
It is. I don't know how he got through the construction we ran into today, but he's very good at his job. And, Tim, my husband, he's not driving. We have a professional driver. And, in fact, there is an entire team that comes along with this bus to take pictures, and they're going to put them on the website so the readers who come out to the signings can relax. They don't have to worry about getting a picture with their phone. They're going to take the team's going to take a picture, and they just go to the website and pick it up.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
It's fabulous, and the bus itself is wonderful. I have never been so relaxed on tour. I've had these 21 city tours that are just, by the end of it, you're dragging, but I'm not going to be that way at the end of this. I travel by bus very well.
So, I guess at home you have more maids than you probably do on this bus, so you're kind of roughing it.
Yeah, it's very much an ego trip, I'll tell you.
Well, tell me a little bit about the bus, because I know a little bit about this bus.
Yeah, it's, I wish I could remember the name of the, I think it's Premier Tours who's putting this together. And I've heard that Obama has been in this bus, and we've had Mitt Romney on this bus when they do tours. And I believe it because it's a beautiful bus, and there's just Tim and me banging around in it. But I can see like four or five authors getting together and using this bus to its full capacity.
I could see me using it for
a party
bus. Oh,
you'll have to come out with me. We'll have to get out there, and I'll give you the tour.
There you go. All right, well, let's talk a little bit about the last book that you did, because you ended a series.
I did. I ended The Hollows, the Witch with No Name, and it ended very well. You never know what you're going to get when you end a long-running, beloved series, because my readers, they're as invested in these characters as I am. And fortunately, I found the right balance. And I've gotten, you know, fabulous reviews. Everybody and that I've talked to has ended the book with a good feeling. And that's what you want as a writer, because you want them to feel good enough that they pick up that next book. And sometimes it's all about trusting the storyteller. And it takes a while, but I hope I've gotten the trust of my readers.
So there really wasn't tears and wailing at your book signing with people with pitchforks, torches,
no,
fire?
No, they were happy. They understand that when it's time to end a series, you should end it. Don't drag it out until people want it to be over. You have to end it on a good balance. It's all about balance.
So, you know, people that gravitate to the genre that you just got out of.
Mm-hmm. Urban fantasy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Kim Harrison. It's like, wow. You know, we know she's a great writer and everything, so let's go ahead and check this out. And I think they're going to be in for a big surprise.
The early reviews have been very positive. You know, the water cooler reviews from the real readers out there have been very positive. And a lot of them say, I wasn't sure. Or a lot of them say, I don't read this genre, but it's still Kim Harrison, and they're finding things they like in it.
So we were talking earlier about maybe even another series after this one. Same genre, do you think? Or maybe are you going to move towards a romance type? Or
are no, you, gonna... you know, I don't write romance. Romance readers love my work, but I don't write romance.
Now you're not going to be a genre skipper.
You mean jumping from genre to genre? I don't know. I've written young adult. I've written graphic novels. I've written world books. I've written straight fantasy. And now I'm writing a thriller. It really kind of shows that a writer is a writer. And a genre is just a label. And it's all about people. If your story is about people, then people are going to enjoy it. And that truly is what I write. I write about people.
So what did you find is your most difficult genre to write, and which one was just the easiest?
Oh, you know what? I really don't know if I can answer that, because as a writer, I'm growing all the time, and what was hard for me before has become easy. So it's always hard. It's never easy.
But to me, it sounds like maybe you're trying to push the envelope and keep you going
always,
in writing.
Always, yes. If I don't feel I'm growing as a writer, I feel like I'm doing something wrong. I want to know what I can do. When I first started, I could only handle two or three characters on the page at one time. And I just wrote a scene where I had 10. And I kept them all straight. They all had different voices. They only maybe said three or four sentences, but they were very distinct. You knew where they were coming from just by what they were eating or what they were drinking or what they were saying. And it worked. And I felt, oh, I've reached a new level. I can handle all these people at one time. And it was a good feeling.
Yeah, you know, to me, that seems like it's like the difference between me writing a stick man and Michelangelo painting on a ceiling.
Be. Yeah, that's a really good analogy. And, you know, a lot of people sit down and they say, I'm going to write. And they think that because they can write a short story or a grocery list or an essay that they can sit down and write a novel. And then they get frustrated. And it's too bad, because they can write a novel. They just have to work at it. You wouldn't expect to sit down and paint a picture that everybody is going to want and love, but they expect themselves to sit down and write a novel that is going to be well received, when they don't realize that there are years and years and years of work that go into it. And it's too bad, because they give up. And, you know, writing, for me, it's a perfect fit. I love what I do. I hope I'm good at what I do, because I enjoy it and I want to keep getting better at it. And I want to keep in contact with my readers, because they are a great source of support. And that's where I am right now. And I'm very happy with it.
So if I were going to be a writer, what would be maybe the biggest tip you could give somebody doing that?
Well, my tips usually depend on where the writer is in their career. But I would always suggest, get yourself in a writer's critique group, start sharing your work, find out what is good advice, what is bad advice, because there's a lot of bad advice out there. But, you know, take that advice and find out if it's good or not. Go to writer conventions, which is where authors, agents, and publishers go, not just to mingle, but to find new talent. And that's how I found my agent. Unfortunately, I don't know a lot about the self-publishing industry, because I found publication the old-fashioned way with the Big Six, which I think are now the Big Five or maybe the Big Four. So I wish I could give advice on that, but I don't have a good handle on it, unfortunately. But I guess the main thing is practice, write, read, and show your work.
And I guess for that person just starting, the advice would be, is the computer plugged in?
Yeah.
Because you've got to start someplace, I guess. All right, The Drafter, of course, book number one in this series. You've probably got number two pretty much finished.
It is. In fact, hopefully I'll have a rewrite letter on my desk shortly after, when I get back from tour. We're working on it fairly quickly. We are looking probably for another September release, hopefully. We're right on track for that. And I've got to write that third book before Christmas.
Now, of course, the same characters coming back, new characters too, all the time?
A little bit of both. My main characters of Alan, Silas, Perry, Jack, and Bill. Bill was a surprise. He's going to be showing up. But my supporting characters in The Drafter are going to be stepping out, and I'm going to be getting a couple new ones. And that was kind of a surprise for me, because I thought my supporting characters were going to come right along with me. But no, they did not. We may see them in book three. I'm not sure yet. But I like variety, and I like the stability of having a core group of characters.
Kim, in the Hollows series, do we find anybody maybe switching genres sometime and coming into
this
series?
Oh, a crossover. I tell you, it's really hard not to. And there may be an Easter egg or two from the Hollows that readers of that series might find. In The Drafter, I might have Perry swear at Tink. At Tinkerbell, which I don't know if I can get away with. My editor might say, no. But I'll see if I can put something subtle in there that she might not see. Nothing too obvious, but the temptation is there. But the worlds are so far apart and different that I don't know. It might, you know, pop the reader out of the experience, and I know better than that.
Kim, how hard is it to knock off a drafter?
Oh, it's extremely hard to kill a drafter. There are ways of slowing them down. Part of the technology that I put in there is that 741 megahertz, which is a nice tone, that blocks their ability to draft. There's a shade of purple, which, in, you know, if they don't close their eyes and they see it too long, that impairs their ability to draft. So their mental wards have this continuous hum, and, you know, the purple color is everywhere, to try to, you know, keep everything calm and stable. So if you know the tricks, you can stop the ability of them to draft, but they are still highly trained individuals, and you can't discount them just tearing a room apart. When I was selling the book, I said it was Born Identity meets Minority Report, and there are a lot of characteristics that my character Perry Reed shares with Jason Bourne. I mean, they're both very unstoppable.
All right. Well, I'll know that my probably my wooden spike will probably not stomp a draft. Or my silver bowl.
No. I actually have a very dusty black belt degree in Hapkido and Taekwondo, and being able to bring that into the books has been a lot of fun.
All right, Kim, let's talk about a website if I want to find out more about the Drafter, more about the Hollow series also, and am I able maybe just to taste a little bit of the Drafter?
Absolutely. My website is kimharrison.net, and I have links on that front page to go right to some excerpts. I've got chapters 1 and 2 on the website. And then I've got a link at the bottom there to go to Chapter 3, which is being hosted on another website. And, oh, lots of information. I already, you know, the book just came out, but as we're talking, the book came out yesterday, and already I've got like 6 or 8 things on my website of interviews and articles and all sorts of media on this book. And so just pop on over to the website. It's all there. I'm very active on my Facebook. I'm very active on my blog. My readers, you know, I know who they are. At my signing yesterday, it was like I knew half the people there. It was great.
You know, I think that you're able putting up 2 chapters because after you read 2 chapters, you're hooked. You've got to get the Drafter, Kim.
That's the intent. Yeah. I'm like a book pusher. The first couple are free and then you got to buy the rest.
There you go. Yeah. You get hooked on the first 2 chapters and you want more. And then you have to wait for the next book in the series, which, I mean, that'll be a major withdrawals.
Yeah, well, I work as fast as I can.
There you go. All right, well, the book is The Drafter by Kim Harrison, a #1 New York Times best-selling author. I'll tell you what, if you love the Hollow series, check out her brand-new series, The Drafter. What a fantastic story. Perry, Jack, you're going to fall in love with, at least Perry, and let's see what happens to Jack. You know, they say he could be doing things that he shouldn't be doing. Is that right? Maybe not. You'll have to check out The Drafter. Kim, thanks a lot.
Thank you. This has been a lot of fun.
Been listening to Cover to Cover. I've been your host, Park DeWitt, along with Kim Harrison, author of The Drafter.
To access this or other audio programming, visit our website, theflypod.com.